Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is Monday, March 23rd, and we are all here on the quarantine. We are on the lockdown, and it feels like some kind of insane experiment. All of the planet is, It's insane. It's insane, and I hope everybody is safe and healthy out there. I mean that. Some of my friends are battling with some health issues right now. Some guys from Death Angel, Exodus, and Testament. And that's when it gets real, when it's your friends. And I want to just send some positive vibes out to everybody out there. Just hang on. We're going to get through this, man. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and also all your support. It's just thank God I have this podcast to entertain you guys on lockdown. I can't think of anything better right now than to be able to put these podcasts out so you have something to keep your mind off of the insanity out there. Today is a fantastic friend, an amazing friend, an amazing player, songwriter, singer. This is the second time he's been on. Mr. Marcus King is here today. I first had him on June 3rd, 2018. When he was out playing guitar for Chris Robinson's As the Crows Fly. And I have been hooked on this man since I first heard him about 4 years ago. I cannot tell you how special this guy is. When I watch him play, sing, and hear his songs, I just see somebody so authentic, it just blows my mind. And that's why I sound like a broken record on this show year after year of just constantly promoting this man. Him, Rival Sons, people out there just grinding it away. Mother Hips. These bands that I'm always talking about because I just feel they're very special. Very special. Anyway, he was in town to do some songwriting. He came out here to L.A. for a little inspiration. And then the coronavirus whole thing happened. And he flew out of here. I went and spent the day with him at the Sunset Marquee in West Hollywood, one of the greatest rock and roll hotels still open and celebrating rock and roll. And it was just myself, his girlfriend, and him in this whole hotel. It was wild to think about how many wild nights I've seen at this hotel, and it was complete ghost town. I got to sit down and really spend some time with a friend, and it really helped myself. Check out his music, man. I cannot stress this enough. It is beyond. He's got a new record out. It came out, I'd say, about 6 months ago called El Dorado. No, maybe 5 months ago. Anyway, it is incredible. This guy is, he writes some of the best soul rock that, you know, if you've listened to my show over the years, I absolutely love soul rock. El Dorado's got some tunes on it that just knock me out. Young Man's Dream, Wildflowers and Wine. This song called One Day She's Gone. Oh my God. Break, love song. It's just deep. And his last record, Carolina Confessions, has one of my favorite songs in the last 20 years easily called Confessions. And this other song, Side Door. So, I mean, this guy, it's just tune after tune. Going to get into it in a minute here. Before we do, I got something for you guys. Here's the deal. You want a great, great deal? Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use the promo code Delray. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew, BlueChew.com. Use the promo code Delray. I know all of you are locked up right now, and you're probably with your loved one, and you want to have a little sex. You'll love Blue Chew. Blue Chew offers men a performance enhancement for the bedroom. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a shiny boner. Shiny boner. At BlueChew.com, you can get your first chewables with the active ingredients that are the same ingredients in Viagra or Cialis. BlueChew.com affiliated physicians work with you to find the right dosage and active ingredients that's best for you. Chewables can work faster. You just chew this and shiny boner. The chewables from Blue Chew can be taken on a full or empty stomach. Online physicians consult free, so it's cheaper than those other two, Viagra and Cialis. It only takes a few minutes to connect with BlueChew.com affiliated physicians, and if you qualify, you get prescribed online quickly. No in-person doctor visits, no awkward conversations. Like, yo, doc, my junk don't work. No waiting in line at the pharmacy, ships direct to your door in a discreet package. Chewables, BlueChew.com, made in the USA. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use the promo code Delray. Just pay $5 shipping. BlueChew.com, promo code Delray. All right. I'm winding down the vertigo I've had over the last few days. I put out a bonus episode on Patreon for you guys, number 60, 66, I think. And some great, great stuff on Patreon right now. All kinds of bonus episodes. Shout out to all the new Patreoners. I really, really appreciate your support, especially right now. I'm out of work. Kevin Stets, Mark Weisenvick, Scorch upped his pledge. Jamie Adams, Steve Gregory, Pastel Pete, Chris Chastity, Craig. All right. What else we got here? Andrew Woolley. Woolley! What's up, Woolley? Will Taylor, Jim Vasquez, Dave McMillan, Gary Radcliffe, Adrian Kluke, upped his pledge, Christian Allen, and Marnie Burton with the solid, solid donation. Thank you so much. I love you guys. And like I said, stay safe out there. Let's get into it right now. Here he is, Mr. Marcus King. This is a great surprise because I've been trying to sit down with you again. And I was on tour while you were on tour. So I was missing you, and that's two bummers because I didn't have you on the show again. But also, I haven't got to see the band in about a year. I've seen the band many, many times, but I wanted to see it on this El Dorado run, and I didn't get to see it, unfortunately. But thank you for doing the show again. Marcus King is here. Round two.
Round two, man. It's good to be back.
Yeah, remember when I first interviewed you years ago?
Yeah, at the wheel turn.
Yeah.
I remember that.
It was so funny because you were, in that amount of time, I think that you've kind of come out of your shell as far as talking and stuff, not your playing and everything, but as a person, a persona, a stage guy, a rock and roller.
Yeah.
You know, it gets to you. You turn into something else, right? Because you get used to it.
Well, you start to get a little more used to it. And for me, I had to create this alternate persona just because of the introvert that I am or that I was. I've grown out of it a bit. But being on the road, like with Chris Robinson when we last did our interview at the Wiltern. That's who I was on the road with then. That was kind of like going to Frontman Academy, because he's one of the most charismatic dudes to be on the stage with. So between that and just growing up a little bit, I think, grown out of it.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, that was an amazing night to see you up there, you know, just rocking those classic Black Crowes tunes. And that was a powerful band, man. That was if I had to take a second choice, it would be that lineup, man. It was so great.
It was tough, man. It was really strong sounding. Tony's a really heavy hitter. For me, I kind of jumped into it without thinking, because I was so excited to do it, because everybody on the stage is people I look up to. And the whole vibe of that tour was like summer camp, because it was 31 dates.
31?
Well, it was 31 yeah. days on the road.
So, oh, yeah, gotcha.
So we all looked at it like summer camp.
Yeah.
Because the bus is dirty, but what's the point in bitching about that? Because it's just going to, you know, be over in like a week. So we all just had this whole idea, and there was no negative vibes like you usually have on the road. So we were all really comfortable around one another like halfway through. It was a really great sounding band.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to watch you, because you were all of a sudden in a 412 cabinet world.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and a big, big, heavy hitting head.
Yeah, man. That's when I was playing Homestead amps.
Yeah.
Those are really powerful rigs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're playing with Chris Robinson, you're playing on 10.
Yeah.
No matter what band he's in, it's like, turn it up, here it goes, man.
Man, I just wanted to offer to him, like, you know, I got to meet Rich for the first time just the other night in New York City. And it was nice to meet him, but I was a little nervous because I jumped into that gig just understanding a little bit about the Crowes and all the negative stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't really know much about that. And then I realized that I was going to be playing all the Rich parts, which was really intimidating to me because it's all open tunings, which I've never played open tunings. And since that gig, I haven't since.
Yeah. You didn't dive down that rabbit hole, huh? Get addicted to it, that Stones thing?
I had to relearn the guitar. It was so foreign to me. That whole tour was so strange. And I got to finally tell him, like, what a fan I am of the parts that he wrote. Like Sister Luck and, like, Jealous Again. Like, all these really, like, Keith Richards-esque, like, rock riffs, man. They'll be going down in history.
Yeah, yeah, that five-string stuff, you know?
Yep.
It's interesting, Keith, you know, he did that, and now if you do it, you just sound like Keith.
Exactly. That's his thing.
That was a fantastic run, definitely. I loved it just because of the song selection, and it kind of reminded me of an old school Black Crowes, you know, tour. It was just kind of like had some great jams in it. Didn't know where the band was going to go, you know?
Yeah, there was some freedom there. I got to speak with David Frick the other day about the same thing, which was a treat. But what he was commenting on was the Almost Cut My Hair. We would do that every night.
A great one.
And that one really opened up because everybody up there was really nervous to do justice to the songs. And that was an interesting time because there were two different sets of Black Crowes out there.
Yeah.
Under different pseudonyms, you know. So everybody wanted to pay tribute to the material. And that was the one song we were like, whew, it's a cover.
We can just kind of let go. We can cut loose.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that is a thing with the Black Crowes, boy. People want to hear those Mark Ford parts. They want to hear those Rich Robinson parts.
Yeah, they don't fuck around.
They want to hear that. And they'll fucking cross arms immediately.
Yep.
You know, like, nah. But you tore it up, man.
I had fun.
It was great. Well, we're here. We finally get to talk about El Dorado. I wanted to ask you about El Dorado because your band, the Marcus King Band, was out nonstop, putting out records, full throttle, touring like crazy, and all of a sudden, you put out what would be considered a solo album, even though the Marcus King Band is your band. This was like a solo record. What was the idea around that? Did you always want to do that? Was it a record company thing or what?
Man, it's It's a little confusing, but it can be cleared up pretty quick. We were on the road, and I decided to move to Nashville, my girlfriend and I, and we found a place playing a show in Nashville, and we couldn't get inside, but I was like, I dig this area. So I was on the road and like signed the lease. I DocuSigned on the road.
You didn't even look inside?
Didn't even go inside the house.
Wow.
And then this was in November.
Yeah.
And I also found a 1980 Eldorado that was in Pennsylvania.
I remember you sent me a picture of it.
Yeah.
You're like, how about this?
How about this shit?
I love that story because you said to your mechanic friend, hey, yeah, I'm kind of looking for one, something like this. And the guy goes, well, you just found it. You're not going to find a better one than that.
Yeah, and it was a hell of a deal price-wise, too. So I had it shipped to my guy. And I did both of those things from the road because we were touring, like you said, so heavy that I couldn't really do anything. I couldn't really go and take care of shit. And we had 3 days off the road, and in that time, I moved from South Carolina and moved my girlfriend out of her house in Virginia. And we just took a Penske and my Cadillac up to Nashville, moved in, and then left again. And the first week that I came back and really got settled in my home, I was writing with Dan Auerbach, who produced Eldorado. And
from the Black Keys, in case people don't know.
And the Arcs, yeah. So we had been spending a lot of time writing together, and at that point we'd known each other about a year. And he said, hey man, let's do a record. And I couldn't really say no to the opportunity. And the way that he approaches a record is he's got his guys. And, you know, these are no spring chickens, you know. He's got Bobby Woods and Gene Chrisman from the original Memphis Boys, along with Reggie Young, played with Bobby Womack and all these other cats. Dusty Springfield, Son of a Preacher Man, Elvis Presley. And we had
Bobby Womack, straight legend.
Yeah, Bobby Womack's the shit.
Straight legend.
Speaking of As the Crow Flies, that's all we listen to every night, Bobby Womack or P-Funk.
Wow.
But we also had Dave Rowe on bass, and we had Billy Sanford in the studio, and he wrote the Pretty Woman riff.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, he's no slouch.
Wow.
So all these guys are like 80 years old, but they've been preserved by the studio. And they were
they've been in there so long, no sun.
Yeah, so they're all so sharp still and just so eloquent with their playing, and it made me approach everything different. So it wasn't a step away from the band in a sense that I don't want to go back to them.
Right.
And they're playing the material live with me right now, so it's really kind of, it's interesting to hear their take on it, because the live show ends up being a little more
muscle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can
and
see
in
that.
In the studio, the guys were laid back because they're not in a hurry to get anywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They move slow, and I love that.
It's a fantastic record. It's totally different than the previous record, and it's got a lot of R&B, which I love. I always love what I call soul rock. I talked to you about it before. Like Rita's Gone would be kind of soul rock to me, but it's definitely got that flavor. You know, it's got some Al Green in there. It's got those great backgrounds. Some
thanks,
strings,
man.
And everything.
Yeah, that was the first time I ever had strings on a record.
Oh, man, the strings sound fantastic. I absolutely got... Well, the opening, Young Man's Dream, is just great. I was like, right away, like, oh, this is going to be totally different, this record. That's a great way to hear it. But there's a song on there, man, that One Day She's Here... That song is unbelievable, man.
Thank you.
Me and my buddy Scott Ponsetta, we were arguing, is it Wildflowers and Wine or is it that one, you know? And then he was like, nah, it's One Day She's Here. And I, after a while, I was like, yeah, you're right, man. You're right. But the flavor of those tunes, man. Now, did you write them all with Dan?
Yeah, the way that we approached the writing part, so we cut all the songs in 3 days. We got 18 songs in 3 days.
Whoa.
But
really?
Yeah. Because that band is so tuned in with each other.
Yeah.
And all the charts would get written, and then we'd go in and cut 6 songs a day. So the writing process took a little longer. It was 2 weeks. We wrote like 22 songs or something. And it was me and Dan and a third party at all times. So I'd bring in my ideas. And I've always kind of described it like I had a lot to say, and we wanted to bring in some real legends of the craft to kind of help me make a really sound foundation. I've always referred to these guys as like architectures. So like Paul Overstreet, and he wrote Deeper Than the Holler, and he wrote what's that Keith Whitley song, When You Say Nothing at All?
Yeah.
So he's the man country wise. And then Bobby Woods, who played on Suspicious Minds, and he gave me a CD, which is like outtakes with him and Presley like talking to each other. And it was because even the producer at that time, Elvis, was so hot, nobody would tell him if he was doing anything wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All yeah. yes men.
They're all yes men. And Presley would be like, am I doing this right? And Bobby very proudly gave me the CD and said, if you listen, I'm the only one that's telling him he's fucking something up.
Oh, that's great.
So the soul thing came. Bobby and I would write together, and we wrote like Love Song together and Break. And at a certain point, we realized that there was a theme in place of kind of a coming of age story. And that's where we kind of leaned into it at that point, you know?
This record is like really, really, it sounds so seasoned, man, for you. And now, how old are you now?
24
now. You just had your birthday recently.
Well, you know, you could attribute that seasoned flavor to the cats that played on it.
Right.
And the way that I approached everything, which was, how are they going to appreciate what I'm doing right now? My audience in the studio was complete legendary people playing with me. And they were there to hold me up, but I was completely there to try to play what I thought they would like.
Yeah.
And through that, I learned how to lay back a little bit. This is not a very shreddy record.
No, which is great.
And, you know, if I had have gone into the studio with the idea of, like, I don't want to make a shreddy record, it would have seemed contrived. But everything that we did was just what needed to happen. And it's so interesting because, you know, one could argue that the album is a derivative of, like, the old soul records from Memphis. But my argument is that these are the guys that played on those records, and they're just doing what they know.
Yeah.
And there's this bridged gap between country and like soul, because, you know, Muscle Shoals, you had the same thing. You had these country players playing soul music. It's like there's something really similar in the way that you approach those two forms of music. So with this record kind of bridging that gap, these guys were the ones to do it, you know?
It's fantastic, and it is the perfect amount of sparse playing, which I wanted to ask you what guitar you played on Wildflowers and Wine, because that it definitely is that a Strat, or because it's definitely thinner than a humbucker.
It's a Tele, man.
Tele. Is that that red one?
No, it's actually it's Dan's 62.
Ooh, slab board.
Yeah.
Nice.
I loved it. It had a rosewood neck. It was. Me and that guitar really had a thing. And it's one that he noticed, but he was like, can't let you roll with that one.
Yeah. It sounds great, that tone, that particular tone, and the playing on that song it's so good. And right away I was like, oh man, I gotta ask him what guitar he used on that.
I think most of the tone was attributed to the amp.
Oh yeah? What were you using?
It was an accordion amplifier.
What kind? Accordion?
An app for accordions.
Really?
From the 50s. This company called Floatatone. And they had made amplifiers to mic up accordion players. And we just cranked the shit out of it and put it in the bathroom. And I used it on the whole record.
Wow. You know what tubes are in that thing by chance?
No idea.
84s, 34s? I wonder what it is. It's got such a great sound.
It's versatile, too, because we could turn it down.
Yeah.
And then you get Wildflowers and Wine. Or we'd crank it and really break it up, and you got the Well, or Say You Will.
Yeah. All the same amp.
Same amp.
Ooh, man. It's funny, because on the clean, kind of that cleanest stuff, on Wildflowers and Wine, it's almost kind of Hendrix-y. You know, it's got that kind of flavor when Hendrix would play.
That single coil thing.
Yeah, single coil.
Because the Tele was involved, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What is the difference between, I mean, you've worked with Dave Cobb, who I consider he's the new Rick Rubin in my eyes, as far as whatever he works on, I want to hear it. That's how Rubin was back in the day. That's the kind of trust I had in him. What is the difference between working with Dan and Dave Cobb? Of course, speed with Dan, you guys are just laying it down and getting it done. But what else is different?
Man, just the overall approach was completely different. Both really good. And I mean, as you know, anyone could tell, like, they both have a tremendous track record. And they're both dear friends, too. That's the best part about it, as I like being around them.
Yeah.
And when you're in the studio, there's a certain part of you that has to, you have to relinquish a bit of yourself. Because if you're going to be argumentative or disagreeable about everything, because it's your music, it's your baby, like, I get it. But, like, you've hired somebody to come in because you trust their ear. So just fucking trust their ear.
Yeah.
Just let it go a little bit. That's why they're there. If it doesn't sound good, don't use it. You know, that's always been my approach. I did the same thing with Dave, and the way he approached it was we'd come in and I'd play what I had, and then we'd work on it right there with the band. So, much slower process. Much slower. And we'd start at like 2 p.m. every day and go till about 9 or 10 p.m. And on the flip side of the coin, with Dan, we'd get in at about 9 a.m., and the old cats would already be in there for an hour having coffee and swapping stories. So I'd get there at 9 and be late to the party. And then we'd work until about 10 p.m., so 12, 13-hour days. So the pace and the amount of work we were getting done every day, definitely different. But Dave's approach was just as good, you know. It was also, I was trying to work through songs, you know. He was less a part of the pre-production side of the writing part of things, you know. But there was something beautiful about me and Dave's dynamic, too, where we did Goodbye Carolina, and there's a bridge towards the end of the song that's a guitar solo that's just major sounding and really happy. But the spirit of the song was quite melancholy, and we had originally cut the entire song in that vibe where it was just happy sounding. And I didn't want to be disagreeable, and I didn't have anything to combat his idea. So I took it home, and I listened to it while I went to sleep. I listened to it when I woke up and let it play while I got in the shower. Listened to it on the way to the studio and walked in and said, "Dave, shit ain't working." And he said, "Well, hey, let's try something else." I think a lot of people, you just got to work with them.
Yeah.
It's like, we tried it your way. I lived with it. I can't do it. So I went back out and recut the whole thing. With Dan, it was a much different vibe. We'd play the band, the work tape, Dave Rowe on bass. He would write the chart, and then we'd cut it, man. No looking back.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, you wrote 22 songs and recorded 18?
Yeah.
Are there some coming out as a second record or just on the back burner, or what's going on with those?
I think, you know, there's a possibility of some B-sides, but the next record I'm working on, there's some songs that kind of fit with what I'm trying to do on this next record, so I'll probably end up recutting them, because I want this next record to have my band involved for the most part. But, I mean, as far as when that's going to happen, you know, time will tell right now.
Yeah, we're here in the ground zero of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Which is pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
You and I are both touring artists and immediately shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird thing, man. You know, you think about, like, I look at your career and Rival Son's career and my career as kind of the same. We've just been burning it up about the same amount of time, busting our asses.
Yeah.
And you start to get some roll going, and then life steps in, man. It can be anything. It could be health. I had neck surgery recently. Or it could be a complete planet thing that's going on right now. And it's really wild to think about, because you sit down for a minute. I've been off now for 6 days, and you take it in. You're like, wow, I haven't been off this long in 10 years.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah, right? And then there's a scary part of it, too, where you just go like, well, this is kind of nice.
You don't want to get used to that.
You don't want to get used to that, man. Yeah. You don't want to get used to that. You know, the wheels got to be turning, right?
Right. My dad's always said, you know, be weary of downtime.
Yeah.
Because everything you read, man, it's like you just read about people getting into trouble or people getting hurt, people dying. You know, it's always during the time off the road.
Yeah.
You know, for me, my approach has always been to just have my nose to the ground and just go, not look up. not come back up for air until I got where I wanted to be and where I had a little bit more authority to say, I want to tour this much.
Yeah.
And not lose, you know. You know, there's bands out there that are able to play 30 days a year and keep their whole crew on retainer. That's a little too little touring for me because I love it.
Yeah, same here. Same here, but you got to find a balance, right?
Yeah, because we were on the road, what, 215 days last year.
Jesus.
And I made all my guys plaques.
Yeah.
In the band for birthday or Christmas presents. It said, you know, how many days on the road, this many miles. They all liked it, but they were also like, whoa. I saw them all get exhausted. Just
yeah, you put it in their face. Like, yeah. They, you know, in your mind, you're probably thinking, yeah, we did about 100 dates, man. It's brutal. And then you see 215, 7 million miles, 15 countries away. You're like, oh, what the fuck?
Fucks with your head.
Yeah.
That was what was crazy, speaking of countries, was we kept kind of like just narrowly escaping the coronavirus everywhere we went. And we were in Berlin, Germany, and this cat, this big fan of ours, he's a good friend of ours, he came in from Italy, and he was kind of telling me what was going on there, and I was like, whoa, sounds crazy. And then we kept moving, and then the end of the tour, we got to Copenhagen, and we noticed the gig upstairs had got shifted into like three different shows, because they couldn't have a gathering of however many people.
Right, right.
And we were like, that's weird. It's kind of getting serious over here. And then we flew home, and the next day, you know, our president, or whatever you want to call him, came on and said, we're banning all flights from Europe, which at the time, I guess, evidently wasn't true.
But yeah.
They did slow it down, and now I guess it stopped completely. But we were all terrified because we were like, fuck, we just got out of there. And then I went to New York and played a gig at the Beacon with a bunch of people, and they didn't let people inside. So we just kind of did like this big TV show.
Wow.
But they ended up letting 500 people in. But in the Beacon, you know, it just felt
empty. The Beacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of fantastic venues, that's one of my favorite. But then I left there and came here, and I've just kind of been hiding out.
Yeah, we're in LA, and you came out here to kind of just do some writing. Were you writing with anybody or just on your own? Come out here to get inspired.
Just on my own, man. I just, there's places here that just make me feel inspired.
Yeah.
There's so much history here that just makes me feel, you know, positive energy. And I just, you know, even if I take away from this trip, because I've been a little distracted with everything going on, and my dad's sick.
Your dad's sick?
And we don't know what it is.
Oh, shit.
He's waiting on his test results. So, I mean, we're like really just distracted. And when you're writing, it can really get in your brain. And what I'm going to take away from here is like some just inspiration, at least, and just little ideas. Because, I mean, it's probably the same for you. It's like, I can get little ideas, but you can't go and perform those. You have to sit down at a certain point, put it all together, and create the final piece, you know? But I'm gonna walk away from this week with a notebook full of ideas to start with.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to have some killer lyrics, that's for sure.
I hope.
You know, I know, right? Yeah, it's lyrics are always the hardest thing to write, I think.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like everything's been done. Mm-hmm. You know, I love you, you love me. I don't love you anymore. You don't love me. Yeah. She's gone. You know, it's just like, so to find the, this could give you something completely outside the box.
Yeah.
I noticed something that I really liked about you. Early on when I saw you, obviously a fantastic player, but I know as a young person you want to show people your skills, and you would burn it up pretty hard up there, you know. And as the time went by, I feel that you didn't need to prove it anymore, which was great. And you laid in, and the last few times I saw you, it was just unbelievable, the playing. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I talk about your records all the time and the shows. You know, like when people are complaining to me about who's in the Black Crowes and who's not, I'm like, hey, man, go see some new stuff. Go see Marcus King. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like, go see Rival Sons, go see, you know, go see some new bands that don't be stuck in the past and just be happy everybody's out there playing. It's nuts.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, man. Not only because it benefits me for people to do so.
Let me ask you something about Deshaun. He's gone now.
Yeah, man, he was a big part of Carolina Confessions. If you listen to that record, man, he's shown through. There's not one keyboard solo on the record, but he's one of those cats that's just, his presence shines through so strongly. But he's also one of those stars that shines so bright, you know, one of those birds that you can't really cage.
Yeah.
He's got to do his own thing, man.
Yeah.
Him being a part of the group opened us up so much creatively, but at a certain point, I felt that he was constricted. I felt like we had put a straitjacket on this dude, and that just seemed like a shame, you know?
Yeah.
It was a mutual discussion we had, and it was a difficult discussion for me. But, you know, there have been a couple discussions he and I had where it just became clear that, you know, he felt a little restricted here.
Right.
And we started to feel a little, you know, less of a team player spirit. And we all love him dearly, and when we go through Colorado, we see him, and he comes and sits in. You know?
It has to be at your age, you know, I remember when I was your age and you're in this band and you're going across the world in a bus and your brothers and stuff, and then something happens like that. It's pretty heavy, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to deal with, right? You're just kind of like, ah, man.
Well, it's tough because you know just as well as I do that it's, at the rate that we're going, you know that you're either going to see each other every day or we're not going to see each other for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because the way that we're touring, like, you're either in the bus or you're outside of the bus, and there's going to be however many miles between this time and the next time I see you. You're going to be lumped into that group of people that I get to see when I get to see them. Because unless you come see me in whatever city I'm in, you know, so there's this feeling of like,
not going to see him
it's
again.
It's like, I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it difficult. You know, if we played 30 days a year, like, you know, I'd feel a little more like, well, we'll see each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes it a little harder because you're like, well, shit, I guess I'll see you.
Yeah. That had to be pretty strange because he'd been there for a long time. Your guys have been in the band for a long time. When you were doing the solo record, were they confused or were they just like right on?
Man, they were supportive, man. I think it's, you know, rising tide helps all the ships in the harbor, right? So everybody's coming up from it. Everybody's excited. And they're playing the material live. We just cut a live record at the Neptune in Seattle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's
which is
sick.
Cool because I've heard a lot of people have done live records from there. So we did a live record from there. I don't know if I let a cat out of the bag.
Oh!
But we recorded most of our West Coast run, and we did a lot of the new material. And then shortly after that run, Dean left the band, Dean Mitchell.
Oh, is he gone?
Yeah, Dean's gone too.
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
Wow!
Yeah,
what a great dude he was, man. He's,
yeah.
So now just one horn?
No, we've got a new cat.
Wow.
New cat in the band. His name's Chris Spees Jr., often Speezin'. And he just did this first European run with us, and we all fell in love with his vibe, like, so much. He's such a joy to have around. And we all miss Dean, and we love him, but it was that same kind of departure thing where we're like, you know, it's been nice knowing you. I probably won't see you.
Yeah,
for a very long time.
Had no idea he was gone.
He kind of left like a, you know, thief in the night. Because there's the mutual respect there, you know. He made a soft little post. He's going to do his thing. We're doing ours. And there's no bad blood there. Just like with Deshaun, it's nothing negative. That's what's nice about it.
I think when you get on the road, too, no one probably had an idea that you were going to tour like you did. People get into band. You actually tour what reminds me of when Guns N' Roses broke on Appetite for Destruction. You were touring like that in a thing of like, I guess we're never going home.
Yeah.
And I think you really find out who's in it for the long run once that starts to happen, because that was a grueling couple of years that you guys were doing. Mm-hmm. It was a nonstop thing, man.
That's what confused me. You know, some people's departures, I guess at a certain point you find yourself like, you know, even though I put all this time in and all this effort in, and now things are starting to go good for us, I guess I'm still not happy.
Yeah.
You know, and some people can find themselves in that situation, and I guess the most important thing is to be happy. And everybody else in the band, God, they've really stuck their neck out for me, and that's why we're a unit. That's why I give them everything I can and keep them around, of course. You know, I mean, they're my guys forever, as long as they want to be here.
Yeah.
But Jack Ryan, my drummer, Steve
Campbell.
He's
great.
He's a stick of dynamite.
Yeah.
Explode, boy.
I love that guy because he's such an opposite of drummers. He's like an introvert. Yeah. He's kind of to himself. Yeah. He's like, hey, how are you, Dean? But the guy is a monster on the kit, man.
He's so high all the time.
I know.
he's really exaggerative with his... He's really emphatic. You know, the thing about Jack is, you know the kid that when you were kids and your friend come over and he'd take every toy out, but he wouldn't focus on one. He'd just... all over the place. That's how Jack is. Like, when we were roommates, he'd come into my room to talk to me about something. And I'm really extremely OCD and chronic anxiety and all these things. So everything in my room is very meticulously placed. But he comes around, he just grabs all my shit and just talks to me and just, like, checks something out for a second and sets it down where it's not supposed to go.
Oh, the worst,
what
right?
What do you want? Why are you in here?
Yeah, yeah.
But he... the reason he's so introverted is because he rips off like 5 dabs before a gig.
Oh man, he's a dab man,
he's
huh?
He's a zombie by the time.
Holy
you see him.
Shit, he doesn't yeah. play like one.
I don't
know how people play on that shit.
I don't.
Dabs
get it.
Are way too strong.
I've done like 2 in my life.
They're brutal.
Not for me.
No, right?
Not
it's
for
like
me.
Crack weed.
That's what I call. Yeah, it's like heroin weed.
Yeah,
crack weed. It's when a blowtorch gets involved.
Yep.
It doesn't seem fun.
Blow torches or needles, I'm out.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
A little
like,
extreme.
Wait a minute. Now we're using like tools.
Oh, we got to cook something?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, we got to go to Home Depot.
you need what?
Yeah. You were out there, like you said, 215 dates, and you're a young guy, and. When people are starting to play music in their room and doing their weekly gig or twice a week, when you get into the machine, do you start to feel like some aches and pains in your voice and stuff, your hands and all that? I mean, you're super young, of course, but it's like repetitive motion. It's a lot of singing. It's a lot of travel and grueling. Were you getting anything like that?
Yeah, mostly in my voice.
Yeah.
Because you know the rest you get when you're on a bus and you go to sleep in one city, you wake up in the next and you have a gig that night. It's like, it's not real rest.
Nope.
You know? You're just kind of shutting it down for a minute, but you're not really getting any sleep. And especially in Europe, because you wake up on a ferry and wake up to like dogs sniffing in your bunk and shit, and it's a hostile environment to try to get any rest in, and much less like trying to eat a healthy diet. You know, it starts to wear on you, and that's more so what gets to my voice and the occasional cigarette and the weed we smoke. You know, just trying to have a good time.
And the talking.
And the talking.
The talking, man.
That gets to me more.
Yep.
Because it actually strains your vocal cords more when you're talking to somebody and there's a band playing.
Oh.
Or there's house music playing.
The worst.
Like, so...
yeah.
Where are you guys off to?
Yeah. I'm always like, let's step outside, man, to talk.
Yeah, let's step outside. But, you know, just people just yelling at you or grabbing you. And we do meet and greets, and sometimes I just have to say, like, I'm not really going to talk in this meet and greet. And, like, I'm really happy to see everybody. I want to, well, right now I don't want to hug anybody. Or
yeah,
check
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I'm always happy to hug everybody and take photos, and it's so cathartic for me to meet everybody that cares about our music so much, but... it's the talking, really, that gets you.
It really is. That it's after the gig, when your ears are a little ringing,
yeah.
So you're talking louder,
because
mm-hmm. you're not hearing as well.
I started using in-ears.
Oh, yeah. How are you liking it?
I kind of like it.
Great.
Because it kind of gives you a little more control.
Dude, especially if you're doing stuff like, I was thinking, like if you're doing any of those ballads.
Yeah.
And you need to do a little falsetto or anything.
Yeah.
It's way good for that.
That's what was interesting about that record and the softer approach vocally.
Right. I noticed that.
Because I grew up playing in bars and, you know, we'd play at Chicora Alley every week, man. And they had the shittiest of all shit PAs.
Oh.
I love them to death, but I tell them every week, I was like, I'll do a fundraiser for you every week to change this goddamn PA because yeah. It's so terrible.
Yeah.
The old JBLs, you know, like the 200-pound deals and like the board that they'd let each band mix themselves at. Like, this is not a viable system. The wobbly microphone stand. So I'd play every week and we'd have to sing through this inadequate system and we were a loud band. So between those two things, I grew accustomed to that's how you have to sing. You have to yell all the time. And that's just not the case.
It isn't the case.
Because you go into the studio and you're on a microphone, and that's how I cut all three records up until El Dorado. And I was tired one night. It was actually break that we cut, and I cut with a falsetto. And Dan was like, man, I hope you don't have anywhere to be because we're going to go back and cut everything else.
Yeah, no like shit. That.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, because the voice styling is so cool. And so I love falsetto. I love Mick Jagger's falsetto, of course. He's got one of the great ones for rock and roll. When you look at like Curtis Mayfield,
come on,
I think the guy's one of the best players and singers of all time, and so underrated.
Super.
But his falsetto, and Lenny Kravitz had a great one too, like on So Many Tears I Cry,
yeah,
to keep our love alive. Yeah. It ain't over till it's over.
That's a good one, man.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. You know,
that's a damn good song.
That's a damn good record.
He had a good falsetto, but Eddie Kendricks is one of my biggest influences, as well as Curtis Mayfield. I always really liked falsetto, but I was also, what I studied mostly was female vocalists.
Yeah.
So that range seemed to speak more to me because initially I'd listen to female vocalists to try to mimic what they were doing on the guitar. And when I started singing, that's kind of how it came out. And I started singing when I was 13. And when my voice dropped, my vocal stayed. And that's kind of how it happened.
I mean, growing up around Warren, you know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, he's got that, you know... You know,
he sounds like he's in pain, yeah.
He was killing it at the Brothers gig.
It was a good gig.
Holy sh... Did you go?
I went, yeah.
Wow, how was it live?
He really... I showed up at the tail end of In Memory of Elizabeth Reed.
Yeah.
Because I flew in that day from Copenhagen, and I got held up at the airport... Because I had this small charge going into Canada once. So when I came in to JFK, they really held me up and they were really quite, put it frankly, they were dickheads about it.
Yeah.
Three guys held me up against a wall in a small room and like patted me down.
Yeah, long hair.
Take all my shit off and count my money in front of them.
Ugh.
And they were wondering where all the money was because I was over there playing gigs. I was like, we don't get paid in cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you?
We're not dealers.
I was like, what are you? And they were like, oh, you came in from Amsterdam. I was like, that was my connecting flight.
Yeah.
I was like, why would I fly in? It's like, come on, man.
Yeah. I've been there.
Super rough on me, like for no reason. And just, but we went in and saw the show, me and Hales. And it was great from what I saw. And Warren did a great job of, you know, paying tribute to Greg.
Yeah, man. He's, he's the slide man for me.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. You know, Derek has kind of rewritten the ancient scripture.
Right.
You know, he's kind of rewritten it, or he's at least added a page to it. He is a wizard with that thing. And I mean, it was good to see both of them. I haven't seen Warren in a couple of years. I haven't spoken to him, but... I keep in touch with Derek quite often, you know.
Yeah. You haven't spoke to Warren just because you were swamped, or did you have fallen out, or what?
Well, we just haven't spoken in a couple of years.
Yeah. That's a polite way, huh? All right. Oh, man. love it. I started sitting down and thinking about your career a couple weeks ago. I was sitting there thinking about it, and I was like, everything I think that you might have put on your checklist, you might have checked it off as a dream, you know? Touring across America, multiple records, recording with Dave Cobb and Dan, and now you've got a 335 that was a signature from your grandfather's guitar. Mm-hmm. That had to be like mind blowing, right? Like, wow, I've got my own guitar now.
Man, I'll tell you, one of the craziest things to me that kind of showed me that I was on the right path. I was in Nashville. I was at home. One of those rare occasions I was home. And before this happened, I was on the road with Chris Stapleton, and he gave me one of his signature Princetons, and he had somebody make a amp cover for it. It had like an embroidered Marcus King on there and state bird where I'm from, South Carolina. So it was a little wren bird. And it was the nicest thing anybody had ever done. And up until that point, Gibson had made one prototype ES-345 for me, and I got them to make one for my dad to kind of return the favor of him initially giving me my grandfather's guitar. And then I got them to make one more for Chris.
Rad.
And I had it in my Cadillac, and I dropped it off with Dave Cobb. So I got to go with my signature model in my Caddy to RCA Studio A, give it to Dave. And I mean, we both kind of chuckled at how cool that moment was. And Dave even said, man, it's not like you got a signature like Samick or Schecter or some shit. You got a Gibson.
Yeah, right.
That's when it clicked for me, and I was like, oh, man, that's crazy.
It is crazy, man.
It's insane.
24 years old, you got an ES-335 signature.
I feel really blessed, man. I don't know how else to put it. It's difficult because, I mean, you got to accept the fact that things are, it's a blessing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But you also can't become distracted, and you got to keep moving forward. And my checklist is ever growing. I just want to make music for people that need it.
Are they selling that guitar?
It'll be, I think they're going to make like 50 of them.
Wow.
Later this year. It's a great guitar.
Yeah.
I've said before, man, I said, even if you don't like me,
yeah,
this is a great guitar. It's just, it's one of the nicest ones I've played of theirs in the past, you know, 5 or 7 years even.
It's the five position one, right? So 355, is it?
So the thing is, it's like a 335, 345, and a 355.
Right.
The difference mainly is the varitone switch, which is kind of like their answer to the five-way switch on a...
Oh, on a Tele, on a Strat.
On a Strat.
Oh, yeah. Whoa, it splits the coil?
No, I mean, I'm not really completely sure what it does.
Yeah.
It's on my signature guitar, but I don't use it. My grandfather's had one.
So they made it exact.
Exact.
Except Keith Richards played one.
BB played a 355.
Right. Is 355 the same but with gold parts? Or
man, I always try to figure out, because, I mean, I think at a certain point it kind of was like how the Martin numbers,
right,
at a certain point just kind of describe aesthetics.
Right.
You know? I think 345 and 355. 355, I think, is just a little... not
ornate.
Gaudy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ornate. I guess that's the right way to put it, but it's the Cadillac of instruments. It just looks clean.
When they gave you the first one, were there a couple before you were like, this is right, or was it nailed out of the gate?
Dude, they crushed it immediately. Because Jim Lillard, I'll never forget, I gave him the guitar, and I was cutting some stuff down at Royal Studios, and he brought it back to me at Royal Studios in Memphis. And this was before the Memphis shop was closed down, but Jim, like, I'm convinced that he slept next to the guitar, you know, because he got every little nook and cranny just absolutely right on the guitar. And when they sent me that first signature model, I was leaving that day from South Carolina to go to D.C., and I just took it out of the box because the guitar got there and I had to leave for the airport. So I took the case out of the box and ran out the door and went to the airport. I got to D.C. and just played the gig with it.
Whoa.
So I haven't looked back.
Wow.
They nailed it.
So is Grandpa retired?
My grandfather unfortunately passed.
No, I'm saying the guitar, though. Is it retired?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, she's at home. We had a bit of a scare with the tornado that went through.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I was more concerned about my girlfriend and my dog and my house. But then my next thought was, oh, shit, Big Red's in Nashville. So I called my manager, and he said, well, our office is destroyed, but your guitar's okay. I was like, cool.
Well, it was in the office?
Well, I mean, we have it in a safe place.
Who?
But he was just telling me that the office had gotten destroyed, and we've since moved the location of the guitar. You know, we just like to keep it safe. And I told somebody the story the other day. One of my ex-girlfriends, we were in a van going to a gig, and it was the first gig I had Big Red with me.
Yeah.
And it was the first gig that we took this van on, and it broke down, as they tend to do, these old vans. And the guy driving got out, our keyboard player at the time, hopped out, and then he yelled, fire! And I like reached across and grabbed the guitar and ran out. It was not the coolest thing I ever did. But that's how I care about that guitar.
Yeah.
I had to put up with some shit after that, but...
Oh.
You know.
Fire.
Fire. I grabbed the guitar over her to get it out.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, it's not the most chivalrous act, but...
Oh, my God, that's hilarious.
My girlfriend now, I'd make sure she got out first.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. you're talking about making a new record. That's what I love about you, too. You, Rival Sons, these bands, they're like 70s bands, man. You know, Kiss put out like 2 records a year. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they just put them out. You're getting ready to do another one here. What do you think? What's the focus? Is there going to be a different flavor? What is next for you guys, man?
Man, that's a good question. The material I've been writing, I guess, it's just like it's always been. It's a little all over the place. But, you know, I think the band and I are both kind of on the same page as far as... we're both really influenced by soul music, but we're also influenced by like neo soul, like D'Angelo.
Oh, love it.
And the sounds that he got.
Terrence Trent D'Arby.
I hadn't checked it out. I gotta do
Whoa.
It.
Whoa.
Gotta do it.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
You know, we're influenced
D'Angelo, by D'Angelo, man, that Brown Sugar record.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was a monster, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Entirely. And the Roots. You know, it's that style of music has really impacted us, and I'm really impacted by bands like Unknown Mortal Orchestra and Tame Impala.
You know, great. New Tame Impala is great.
I haven't checked it out yet, but I've got a lot of time now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm
going
to be listening to music. Yeah. So, you know, it's really no idea where this next record is going to go. We're going to go out in the studio and play all the songs I've been writing and just see where the vibe takes us.
Are you on the same label?
Yeah. Yeah, right now I'm still a Concord. Fantasy Records.
Yeah. Now, when you did the record with Dan, that wasn't even planned, right? You just did the record and did you just say, hey, I got a record, and they put it out, or?
Well, we had to, you know, it wasn't planned initially that we were going to do an album together.
Right.
When we decided to do so, you got to go through the proper channels, you know?
Yeah.
You got to play ball a little bit, but
of course.
That's fine.
Yeah.
If they're going to put a record out for you, I mean, it's a blessing.
Yeah. So... we're here now. We're both out of gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking before the mics came on. We're really kind of figuring out, what are we going to do? You know, it's this is what we do.
Yeah.
You know? And thank God I got this podcast.
Yeah,
because I can reach out to people and they can have something. It's like your records. You know, you can turn on your records and listen to them when I'm in the house. And I find that it kind of has taken the, I've learned in the last 6 days, because it's been 6 days, that I'm not like, well, I know I got to go to a gig at 7 and then I'm going to be out till 2. So I try to rush everything during the day and then get ready for the night, then do the same thing the next day. But now I'm kind of getting up, and I'm kind of moving at a slow pace.
Yeah.
You know, I get up, eat a little breakfast, listen to a whole record, top to bottom.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, and then maybe go for a walk. It's wild.
I've always described myself like a top, you know, like you spin it.
Yeah.
And it's like, as long as it's moving, it's like, but when it slows down, it's not going to be pretty. It kind of weevils and wobbles.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of fall the fuck over.
Yeah.
You know, but once you're down, you're not going to move anymore. You know, it kind of takes a while to slow down, and then you fall flat on your face. And, you know, I think we're both kind of realizing that it's important to do this. And I was talking to our buddy Billy Strings. It's like, we've both been talking about getting rest, and now it's mandated. So
yeah,
it's kind of a blessing in disguise. But, I mean, there's a lot of cats out there that are struggling to make it day-to-day right now, and you know, I'm trying to figure out any way I can to help out,
yeah,
you know, comedians and musicians all alike, to try to help with that pain a little bit of not having a gig. I mean, I'm in the same boat, so, you know, I'm open to creative ideas.
Yeah, right? We still need to do that comedy rock tour.
We definitely need to do
that. Man, we got to do that, dude.
Because, I mean, it's such a balance between it. It's like, all the musicians I know, like, I get off the gig, I listen to your podcast, I listen to Your Mom's House or The Church of What's Happening Now.
Yeah.
I listen to podcasts.
Joey. Yeah, shout out to Joey, my man.
Shout out to Joey. So yeah. I listen to podcasts. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of comedians listen, like yourself, listen to music.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's such a, we're kindred spirits, you know?
Absolutely.
So we definitely need to do that tour.
It'd be just, even if we did one, it'd be a gas.
We can, yeah.
Some crazy iconic, like, I've always wanted to do Red Rocks.
That'd be fun.
You know, like, you, your band, and me, Red Rocks.
Yeah.
It'd just be nuts, man.
Well, hell, man. I mean, we're doing the family reunion this year, so we'll give you a call. We need somebody to come out.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
You know.
When is that?
I think, well, again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tentatively, I think it's like the first weekend of, or last weekend of September.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's that'll still happen,
that's
hopefully.
The plan, yeah.
As long as we're all here.
Yeah. As long as we're still here and out of quarantined.
Yeah. You know? What amps are you using now? You got your own Orange? I saw that last time I was with you.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. What is that? What is it? Is it a 84s, 34s? What's the tubes? What's it like? What's it based off of?
Man,
yeah,
it's 6L6s.
Oh wow!
I went and told him because I got very real with them. I love Orange amps. And I love, like, the old Stevie Wonder clips of him playing it. I was,
oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just, they're such great-sounding amps. And, you know, Jimmy Page used one, you know, Wishbone Ash. So I said, man, I love your amps, but they're just kind of confusing to me. Because I had the Rock-A-Verb, and they're not very plug-and-play friendly. Or at least the one I had. Because it's like hieroglyphics instead of numbers. And I was like, fucking A, I don't know how to make this sound good. I've not run into this problem in a long time.
Yeah.
Since I started using amplifiers. So I told him I just want something really basic and simple, and I want it to be a little more like a Fender Super. So now it's got volume, treble, bass, and it's called the MK Ultra. I think we're going to be putting it out, and it's going to be the first Orange amplifier designed and mass-produced in the States.
Oh, wow.
So that's why it took a little while for everybody to sign off on it.
Hand soldered, all that stuff, or?
Yeah.
Wow. And made in the U.S., not in Europe.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy, which is something they've never done before. So we're really excited about it. And Cliff Cooper, the CEO, is a dear friend, and he's been in my corner since day one, and he's really excited to roll this out. And again, I may be speaking a little out of school, but I think it's on its way to getting put into production, but, you know, we'll see.
It's cool. It's just three knobs.
Yeah, man.
Love that.
You don't need much more than that.
No, you don't. Because then you get into dial hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I think this one. Yeah. What does a mid do?
Yeah.
Oh, what's this bottom over here? What's bottom?
Yeah.
Or cut. What's a cut? Yeah. You know, what is all that?
Yeah. You spend more time trying to figure out what it is. I mean, a lot of us don't have the luxury of, like, sitting at home and just tinkering with the amps.
Yeah.
I mean, I do now.
Yeah.
But being on the road, I just kind of want something that I'm like, if I turn this to 10, it's going to sound fucking great. And that's what I have with Orange now. And also, you know, like we talked about earlier, I used to use Homestead amps. And they're great amps. You know, I still have a few. And they're great in the studio. But, I mean, with Orange, I could get them sent to me overseas. They have them there. They're readily available at any SIR. You know, it started out as a convenience factor.
Right. Yeah.
And
for carding purposes.
Yeah.
Just show up with your guitar. You know what the rig is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Because, you know, Homestead, like I used to use, it was just the one guy. And he's such an incredible builder, but the turnaround was quite slow. And, I mean, you know, it was, I always needed to have a few backups, you know. But going overseas a ton kind of made me want to check out Orange. And that's kind of how that transition happened. And I still play the Homesteads, but
yeah,
the Orange deal has been quite fun, too.
How about your new V, Mr. Banker there?
He does a great job, man. Matt Hughes with Banker Guitars in Atlanta, Georgia. And he and his wife are just dear friends of ours as well. So they're just a gas to be around. But when he started building guitars for me, he built me a
Firebird.
Les Paul and then the Firebird.
The Firebird's unbelievable.
It's insane.
It's insane.
Yeah. And I was with him from that point, and then there was a weird thing with Gibson.
Oh, yep.
But then he became one of the only cats that could make Gibson-style guitars.
Yeah.
So he's just the one dude, but he's got people ordering guitars left and right, and I'm so happy for him. He just built me a Telecaster with a Bigsby on it that's a tone bender.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So oh, yeah. I've
got two levers that bend the B and the G.
Like the palm
string.
One?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna be carrying the pedal steel parts on the road with this Telecaster.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
you know, I had Jim Campolongo on, who's the king of pedal steel tele playing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he was like early on in the 90s in San Francisco, just this legend that could play this stuff that sounded exact to pedal steel.
Yeah.
And that was really hot for a few years. Remember, everybody was just rocking the pedal steel sound on their telly.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring that back a little bit.
Yeah.
And mainly because, you know, I had a unicorn in the band, Dean Mitchell, who played pedal steel and saxophone.
Yeah.
So when he left, I was like, ah, shit. God. I'm going to have to replace him with two people. Because he carried the weight of two men. But, you know, a great guy, too. But, now I'm trying to kind of carry the load myself with this, you know, hybrid machine.
Yeah. How you liking Nashville?
I'm digging it, man. I mean, it's a lot sunnier out here.
Yeah.
It's quite nice. So, I mean, I could see a westward move in the foreseeable future, but...
Out to L.A.?
Yeah, maybe L.A., maybe a little further west.
That'd be rad. Like where?
Like Hawaii, maybe.
Hawaii?
Yeah. At a certain point when I finally slow down a little.
Yeah.
But the mandated rest is going to be spent mostly in Nashville. And I love Nashville, man. It's one of those towns just like L.A. that just speaks to my heart.
Yeah.
You can feel the energy. It's, you know, you can find the right dive bars, man. That's a big one for me. I like a good dive bar.
I just had Chris Layton on the podcast. And it made me think about you today as I was coming over to interview you. How much was Stevie Ray Vaughan an influence on you? Did you go through that Stevie Ray era yourself?
Man, I go through it every week.
Yeah.
He's a giant to me. Stevie, it's crazy how you become numb to how huge of an influence, just like Hendrix.
Yeah.
You become numb to like what a heavy of a presence that was in your life. And everybody else's, not to imagine how impactful he was to people that were there to see him live. Like my dad saw him live with Jeff Beck. But what a heavy cat. And his playing style was so intense. But that's who I was in a real big Stevie Ray phase when I decided to stop listening to guitar players. Because I didn't want to just sound like Stevie.
Right.
Because, I mean, he looked up to Albert, and he looked up Lonnie Mack. You know, he was looking up to his favorite players, and that's what made him sound like him. So at a certain point, I just started listening to singers and saxophone players and organ players and pedal steel players. I just wanted to listen to anything that wasn't guitar. But before that happened, I was mostly just listening to Stevie.
It's funny, Mark Maron and I were just on this 5-week tour. We're driving around America in rental cars.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it was great. We'd fly in and I'd fire up El Dorado for him.
Oh, cool.
You know, because I, you know, when you were at the Troubadour, I was filming some stuff and sent it to Mark, and he was like, oh, that kid's got it, man.
I just watched his special last night.
Oh, how'd you like it?
It's fucking great.
So good, right?
So
that
great.
Closing piece?
Yeah.
Wow.
That shit ripped me apart. It was so good.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But we were listening to it, and he was like, oh, yeah, yeah. He likes that Albert King. He likes that Albert King.
Albert King. I saw he just bought a Junior.
Yeah, we got that when we were in Empire Guitars. You know that place?
Is that in Ohio?
I you know, I already forgot where we were. My brain does not remember any of the cities we were in.
I've got that problem. I've got that same condition.
Yeah, right?
Well, when you're doing 5 a week.
I know.
You got to really... really make me remember you.
Yeah. And I love Empire Guitars and the guys there. So, yeah.
I think I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to look real quick. But they, we went in there and, you know, Mark had been wanting a vintage guitar for a while. And I had sold a 55 special, TV yeah. special to yeah. a buddy of mine. Bob Spector years ago, and he hit me up about 6 months ago. He goes, hey, I'm selling your guitar if you want it. And I said, oh, man, I don't have that kind of money right now, but Mark, you should buy this.
Yeah.
I go, look, man, sorry, it was a 58 because
yeah.
it had the rubber toggle on it. And I was like, you got to buy this. I scouted it. It took years to find this. This was the one, the P90 Scream. It stayed yeah. in tune forever. It had the weird oatmeal finish. It kind of had faded in a weird oatmeal.
Yeah.
I go, this is the one. He's like, oh, I don't know, maybe, yeah. Let me think about it. But Mark's not a guy that, he's not like me where he just goes, done deal, let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
So he missed it. So we're out on that tour and we're listening to a lot of guitar. And somebody said, hey, Empire Guitars. I go, oh, I know them. I see them on Instagram. And Mark goes, yeah, let's go. So we were looking on the way there on their Instagram. He's all, hey, they got some great double cutaway juniors in there.
Yeah, that's the one.
And we went in. They had three.
Yeah.
And we played them all. And he grabbed this one. It was funny because at first I was like, this is the one. And then he played another one. I go, nah, this is the one. And then, and then he kept playing this one. I go, nah, this is the one. And we're playing it through a 4-input 59 Tweed Deluxe, classic Neil Young.
You can't go wrong, man. Fender amps and Gibson guitars, that's the purest form of what this guitar is going to sound like.
Yeah.
I just used a 59 double cutaway junior. I just worked on this record, a tribute to Neil Casal.
And oh, rad.
Yeah. I did one of his songs called No One Above You, and I played a 59 junior that was Jim Scott's, who was kind of producing and as well as Dave Schools. It's a really, really special record. It was intense to be part of it. Me and Eric Krasno went up and played on this track, and it was with Dave on bass and Tony Leone on drums, who was in the Crow Flies with me, and also Adam McDougall, who was in that band too.
And they were in that the Circle band.
Yeah, Circles Around the Sun.
Yeah, man, that first Circles Around the Sun, I mean, I first heard that, you know, they put that together for the Fare Thee Well shows.
Yeah.
And it was the first time, I've said this before, but it was the first time in my life where in between sets, I was like, hey, what is this music?
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah.
I mean, it grabbed me. Like, this music was playing for like 40 minutes in between the two sets of Fare Thee Well. And I was like, what is this? And it hit me so hard that I seeked it out for the next week or so on websites and found out what it was.
Right.
And then got it, you know, and I was like, God, this is great.
It was a fantastic group, man. Still a fantastic group.
Yeah, they did a tour.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to replace a heavy hitter like Neil, but I think they're continuing to follow the path that he was on to.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, where are we going after this? To jam in the van?
Yeah, jam in the van.
You going to play on that?
Yeah, they hit me up. And
where are they?
They're about 15-minute Uber ride from here.
Cool.
So we're going to hit that up.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
I'm going to sing with you.
Come on, man.
we'll do the Jack by AC/DC.
Oh, man. Speaking of vintage guitars, we just played the Music Man and the P-Bass that were used for Those About to Rock.
Oh, shit.
The live bass and the studio bass.
Whoa, where'd you use that at?
In Paris.
In Paris? Yeah. Oh, really?
You'd get a kick out of that. Out of
I tell you what, man. I've been listening to that record nonstop all last week. Even though we did the tribute to Bon Scott.
Yeah.
After that, we were eating dinner with a bunch of the guys, and we got into how great that For Those About to Rock record sounds.
Yeah.
It's unreal how dark and massive it is.
Yeah. Do you know where they cut that?
I think the same place is Back in Black.
Okay.
I'm almost positive. I think it was just like the same formula, but they even got better tones.
Yeah.
There's something about it. It almost sounds like Hollow Bodies on 100. You know, yeah. Marshall's on 100 with Hollow Body just...
Yeah.
Yeah,
man.
It's
heavy.
It is heavy. Are you an AC/DC guy?
Man, I mean, enough to appreciate the sounds of those records and how chunky those riffs were. I mean, maybe I'm going to go through my AC/DC phase, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I've been a big appreciator of their music.
Right.
But I haven't been preaching the gospel, so to speak. You know.
You will. What have you been listening to lately?
What have I been listening to lately? Where's my phone?
I know. You gotta look. I'm the same way. I'm like, you know? I'll look.
I'm always on my Bill Evans Trio kick. And this guy that we had open up for us for a while, his name's Early James. His name's James Mullis. He just put out a record. And he's very Tom Waits kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
But Early James and the latest... He put out a record called Singing for My Supper. Been digging on that record. And he did it with Dan as well.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting because it's the same band that did El Dorado.
Yeah.
So I hear a lot of, it's like, yeah, it's Dave doing his thing.
Yeah.
In Chrisman. That's a great record. Always listening to Aretha, you know, her Amazing Grace record.
Yeah.
That's what I've been digging on lately.
Yeah, I think Maren is doing the Aretha Franklin film right now.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he plays the famous Sun Studios guy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm pretty sure I got this right. I don't know. I hear, you know, my brain is so scrambled, especially I got vertigo right now. I'm just holding on.
I didn't want to be the one to bring it up, but it's probably because you're not touring.
I know.
Your body's like, what are we doing now?
I truly believe that. It's like, hey, you're supposed to be moving. Yeah. And if you're not, your brain will be moving. Your head, you know?
I'm like, exactly.
You know, and I'm a guy who absolutely hated the teacups growing up at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get on that, get off, you just feel horrendous, you know?
I don't like them either, but I've been taking on them. The Nashville Fair is quite a scene. It's pretty insane.
Oh.
I kind of question the, you know, how safe those rides are and the teacups.
Oh, yeah.
They get very close to each other.
I know.
That's the part that I didn't like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're about... Yeah.
And the meth with the carnies.
Yeah.
You know, they've been up a few days. I think I forgot a bolt. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
I think I got it.
Yeah. And the speed that you're going doesn't really, you know, register to them because of the, you know, the substances.
Well, I got to tell you, man... I mean, you know, I'm a giant fan of you, and it's great to see you just constantly getting bigger and bigger.
Thanks,
man. That's all I care about is good music being found, constantly shouted out. I sound like a broken record, you know. Actually, I just heard this guy Brian Fallon. I kind of liked him recently. Guy, I think he's from Jersey, kind of a Springsteen thing, man.
Okay,
kind of cool, but. If I like it, man, I'm going to smash it down people's throats, you know? And
that's what I like about you, man. You're always turning me on to new music.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, and I'm glad you watched that new Marin special.
It's fucking great.
And watching some comedy. I know you're a comedy guy, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, it's what I like to do when I get home, listen to comedy or watch new specials.
Well, it's great to see you, and I'm sure I'll see you soon. Where are you going to record the new record at?
I think we might be doing it out around this way. So,
in L.A.?
So you'll be seeing more of me.
Oh, that'd be great. I could come hang.
Yeah, man.
They got a studio here at this hotel.
I know, man. I know. Yeah. It's a nice one. Beautiful place here.
This hotel, we're at the Sunset Marquee. It is pure rock and roll. It's got Ross Halfen photos all over the place. They've got a studio here. This is where I met the guy. Jay Davis was the bar manager at the time. The bar here was super hot, called the Whiskey Bar. Not the Whiskey A Go-Go. It was called the Whiskey Bar. It's in the front there. Mm-hmm. It was red hot for rock stars, man. Bono. You know, you'd be like, they only let like 50 people in this thing a night. It'd be crazy. You'd be in there, it'd be like Bono and then Marilyn Manson and then Chris Robinson or something, you know? Yeah. And it is insane. And I met the guy, Jay Davis. He was the bar manager, who was a comedian and put on shows. And we became great friends. And years later, he was the guy that gave me some of my first stage time. And we think back to that. Like, dude, he was like the first guy I met when I moved to L.A. Like, I mean, I knew people in L.A., but a stranger.
Right.
And here he is 22 years later in my life, and we're in the comedy world. It's so bizarre.
It is bizarre, man. And just like you say, man, that's why I come here to write and spend time, because that energy is here, you know?
It is here.
It's a heavy vibe.
I truly believe that, man. I truly believe that. Did you see the Laurel Canyon documentary?
I did.
It was good. I liked it.
That was a special one, man. That really, it made me want to go buy a Rickenbacker.
Yeah, right.
So that's the next purchase I'll be making.
Yeah, get a little Birds flavor. Exactly. Marcus King Birds flavor.
Yep, it's coming.
How about the ZZ Top one? You see that yet?
I haven't watched it yet, but I'd imagine it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Oh God, a band.
That early stuff is about as raw and just dirty as you can get.
I mean, Pearly Gates, you know, and those songs, you know. Just Got Paid into Jesus Just Left Chicago.
Yeah,
come on, man.
You can't touch it. It's very real about it, too. ZZ Top, one of the greatest bands.
Yeah, one of the only two bands with original members, them and Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nuts. All right, man. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Let's go do the jam in the van.
Right on, man.
It's
going to
be pretty awesome. All right, guys, get the record if you don't have it yet. El Dorado. And obviously, none of us are out on the road, but spend some time listening to all of his records. I've shouted it out 1,000 times. Look at him on YouTube and lose your mind. And also, I want to give a shout out to Chris Porter, good friend of mine. We are huge fans, and we go see you together, so it's always great. All right, guys, thank you for tuning in. Keep the candles lit. Stay safe, and wash your hands, huh? Wash your goddamn hands, you filthy ape. See ya.